Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome to New Books in European Studies, a podcast channel of the New Books Network. I'm Tim Jones, and my guest today is Roman Deininger, co-author with Uwe Ritzer of Markus Söder, The Shadow Chancellor, which will be published in October by Dröhmer Knauer. Germany will hold a federal election this time next year, and it'll be the first since 2005 in which Angela Merkel will not be a candidate for chancellor. Although a leadership election is underway inside her Christian Democratic Union, speculation has grown to fever pitch that it will be Markus Söder, the leader of the CDU's sister party, the Christian Social Union, and First Minister of Bavaria, who will be chosen as the Chancellor candidate of the right in 2021. This would be unusual, but it would be understandable. According to the latest polls, 56% of Germans want Söder to run, 23 points ahead of his nearest CDU rival. And among Christian Democrat voters, this desire is shared by 75%. So who is this man? Why is he so popular? And if he does indeed succeed Merkel next year, what should Germany's geopolitical partners expect from a Söder administration in Berlin? Aside from the man himself, there's no one better to ask than Roman Deininger. He's a longtime political reporter for Süddeutsche Zeitung in Munich. Not only is he the co-author of this new biography, but his book on the CSU, Portrait of a Special Party, was published just 7 months ago by C.H. Beck. As a reporter, Roman has been stalking Söder for over two decades, as this wily politician climbed his way to the top of Bavaria's dominant party and began his emergence onto the federal stage. Roman, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
How long have you had this book planned? I mean, obviously, it's very well timed now, but did you look into the future?
Well, of course, it was a little bit of a gamble when something like 5 years ago, my co-author Uwe Ritzer and I decided to write a biography about Söder, who at that time was basically a provincial politician in Bavaria. But I'm sure we were not alone with our forecast that he has quite a career ahead of him. But that he has a national breakthrough now in 2020 during the corona crisis is unexpected and even stunning for us.
Yes, it's as you say, it's really the corona crisis that really seems to have put him on the national stage. What did he do? What was it that he did that was so right that achieved this for him?
Well, I think that Söder met his political moment in the corona crisis. The corona crisis has completely reshuffled political calculations, career path, the question of a Merkel successor in the chancellorship in Germany. And Söder surely is one of the beneficiaries of these developments. And that's basically because he's a hands-on politician, he's a straight talker, and all those qualities were in high demand when the pandemic broke out. I think his crisis management in Bavaria, where he's the premier, stood out compared to other German single states. He was very clear on hard measures, on timely measures, lockdowns, testing, other stuff. And with all that, he captured national attention.
Yeah, and has that stood the test of time? Has Bavaria's performance in the pandemic proved to be as positive as it looked in the early stages of the crisis?
Well, there's an argument about that because the numbers in Bavaria are not that great. But in general, I would say that the main indicator that Söder really grew as a politician in the public image in that crisis is that the numbers hold up even after some stumbles that Söder had in his crisis management in recent weeks. I think he's rewarded mainly for his open and clear communication, very energetic, not panicky. And people seem to accept that on a working basis, some faults happen in that crisis. Corona is not a crisis that has some immaculate heroes. And my feeling is that people are willing to forgive some mistakes politicians make in this crisis if they display leadership. And that's what Söder does.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we drill down into the kind of person he is, could you give us some background to the special history of Bavaria, really, the politics of Bavaria, why it's different, the history of the CSU, and essentially why, since the war, it's been a one-party state?
Bavaria is very special. I think the only international comparison I could come up with is Quebec in Canada, a very special a state in Canada, and Bavaria in Germany is, they're two very opposite feelings toward Bavaria and Germany. And the first feeling is admiration and even envy for the natural beauty of Bavaria, for the economic success with big corporations like Siemens, car makers like Audi and BMW, FC Bayern Munich as a great football club. So that's the one thing. The other thing is that some people tend to think of Bavaria as too, let's say, folkloristic. As it's a little bit ridiculed for its folksy traditions. Think Bierfest, think Lederhosen, and the independent spirit that somehow rules Bavaria, which is quite bordering separatism, depending on whom you ask. So that's special about Bavaria, and that's really reflected in politics. So if you call yourself a free state like Bavaria does, and if you're always talking about a certain degree of independence, a politician from Bavaria is not really slated to be chancellor. So that's probably why it never happened, why never somebody from Bavaria achieved that office. And I would call it kind of exceptionalism that exists in Bavaria. And of course, that's not helpful when it comes to national elections. We also have to convince voters in, let's say, North Rhine-Westphalia or in Berlin.
Mm. Yeah, it's odd that because you made the comparison with Quebec, for example, but Canada has had Quebecois prime ministers, and equally in the UK, Scotland is very separate, but there have been many leading Scottish politicians and several prime ministers. So Bavaria seems to be particularly special.
We can agree on that, definitely. I mean, Söder himself has asked the question if people in Germany really want to be governed from the Hofbräuhaus, which is, of course, a big beer hall in Bavaria. And I think that's the cliche trap some Bavarian politicians step in. And if Söder really wants to run for national office, it would be his challenge to stay away from all those all too folksy things. I think he would need to appeal to the really more austere political culture in Germany. In Bavaria, it's all a little bit more theatralic, I would say. It's it's more like they're more like actors on a stage, and in other parts of Germany, you really like going straight to work and no sideshows. That's different in Bavaria.
Right. It's funny because I mean, before my time, Franz Josef Strauss, but Edmund Stoiber always struck me as very straight-laced, very. He looked like a bank manager or something like that.
Absolutely, that's a very good observation. I mean, Stoiber became a national figure because he was like that. I mean, he was able to rock a beer tent, you know, to speak there and bring people on the tables clapping. But on the other hand, he had that manager demeanor. And that made him, someone to talk to for the biggest corporations. And, he actually was pretty close to the chancellorship. He only 6,000 votes more, and the union under his leadership would have been ahead of the Social Democratic Party at the elections in 2002.
Yes, I mean, can you tell us more about the origins of the CSU and why it has been such a dominant force in the state?
Yeah, the CSU is a special party because I think it's a first we call it Volkspartei in Germany, a big tent party that's really encompassing the whole society. Before the Nazi regime, many parties in Germany had some kind of religious background, some kind of social background that defined the party. And the CSU was the first one that really, with consequence, opened its doors for Catholics and Protestants, for workers civil servants and people running businesses. So that big tent somehow held up over the decades and is still today a decisive factor in the relative success of the CSU, because it really there's basically no part of society that the CSU is not in some way appealing to. So that was the one thing. The other thing is that, of course, the CSU has a giant advantage of being a regional party playing a federal role. So they are limited to Bavaria when it comes to running for a statewide office. They ruled Bavaria in, I think, 71 of the 75 years of existence, which probably makes them the most successful party in European post-war history. And they also did that by trying to act like kind of official state party. They were really daring and in the imagery they're using, the symbols they're using, they have just adapted shamelessly Bavarian state symbols. And as long as the Bavarian post-war story was one of the rise of an industrial power, of course, people, at least the big majority of people in Bavaria, was very willing to buy into that narrative. And now, finally, we have 2020, after 75 years of CSU history, there are other parties really trying to take away that monopoly of the CSU on the Bavaria story. And so I think Bavarian politics is now are now getting much more competitive because other parties are really taking the piece of the cake. But over decades, the CSU was was alone and mostly governing alone.
Mm. And the main challenger party now in the region is the Greens, is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, the Greens in Germany took a big step from being a party that was just founded on saving the environment and the ecology to a real party of the political middle, of which is rooted in the middle of society. And while the CSU in the last years, last 10 years, let's say, the refugee debate was at the center of that development, the CSU was a little bit shifting away from the middle to the right, and the Greens were getting to the middle from the left. So that was a development that really hurt the CSU. And only after almost losing the 2018 state elections, Söder, the party chief of the CSU, was willing to take consequences. And he took the CSU on a kind of green course to prevent the Greens from becoming even stronger. And well, they are the main rival now for the CSU, and they are also probably in federal politics the main rival for the union.
Hmm. Yeah, that's what you've touched on there is something you mention in the book, which is that Söder is adaptable, that he, and in some ways you say he embodies the CSU like nobody else. He's a tough guy. At the same time, he's vulnerable. Sometimes he's conservative. Sometimes he's liberal. Sometimes he's old school, but he's on Instagram. So he's shown that ability to adapt. I mean, I remember during the asylum crisis with the CSU in 2017 at the federal level, he came across as the hardliner, and now he seems to be much more. He comes across as more liberal. Is this real? Is this what should we read into this?
Well, that's the question that is following Söder his whole career. Is this real? Is he speaking out of conviction, or is he just making things up because it's strategically helpful for him? So the reproach of his critics is that he's an opportunist, that he's just doing what gets him elected. And I would say that he has some let's say green dots in his career. He was a minister of the environment in the Bavarian state government, and in that role, he actually was progressive when it came to the fight against climate change and all that. But the thing is, when he took up another office, when he became the Bavarian minister of finance, he completely forgot what he did or didn't care about what he did as a minister of environment. He completely did only what helped him in his new role. So as a minister for environment in Bavaria, he said, okay, we have to save the mountains. As a minister of finance, he was more responsible for tourism, and he said, okay, we can't save every mountain, let some tourists in. So if you ask me if I believe he's a eco-activist in the depth of his heart, I don't think so. But on the other hand, if he's consequent in what he's doing now, if he's holding up that course for, let's say, 2 or 3 years, well, he will be governing on facts, not on words anymore. So he has a chance to get away with that new course.
I mean, Bavaria itself has gone through something of an industrial revolution, hasn't it? I mean, it's now become a a hub for life sciences and artificial intelligence and has gone beyond heavy industry. Is this, did he have much to do with that in his role as in the finance ministry and as first minister of the state, or is that something that, that happened much more organically through several administrations?
I think he put himself in the tradition of exactly what you're describing. I think his contribution is limited because he's the giant leaps Bavaria took as a state from agricultural region to industrialized region to a high-tech region happened before he was influential in Bavarian politics. But of course, that's a story he likes to tell. Bavaria is, on the one hand, is Lederhosen and Bierfest. On the other hand, it's innovation and economic success. Laptops and Lederhosen, that's that was Edmund Stoiber's motto. And I think this combination, a tradition and modernity, has quite an appeal also outside of Bavaria. So I think Söder really tries to write a new chapter of that old story. He's investing heavily in research, in digital research, and so we have to see if he really leaves a mark that's comparable to other first ministers of Bavaria, like Franz Josef Strauß or Edmund Stoiber, who might also be internationally known. But he's definitely putting himself in that tradition.
I mean, we'll come in the conversation to whether he will get the nomination, but let's assume he does for the moment and that he becomes chancellor. Do you think that is something that he would bring to the table? He would, you know, there are criticisms. I mean, Germany has had an economic miracle in the last 20 years, but there are some criticisms that it's been too reliant on exports, too reliant on particular type of heavy machinery export, and it needs to reconfigure to deal with competition coming in particular from China. Is that the way, have you, and you've been around him a lot, is that something that has come up in his thinking, do you think?
Well, I would say that there is no comprehensive economic philosophy of Markus Söder that we can rely on, or that we can look up in the archives. You know, I think he's basically in every political field a take charge style politician who is willing to resolutely make hard choices, and I think that he would bring this also to economic policies. If you look at what he does in Bavaria, then he's a very, very robust advocate of Bavarian enterprises and Bavarian businesses in Germany. So if you translate that one level higher, I think I could imagine him being a little bit more aggressive and resolute in defending German economic interests in Brussels and beyond.
In fact, the more you say, but the more he reminds me of Chancellor Gerhard Schröder in terms of his, you know, being somebody who's quite shameless, doesn't have very strong opinions, but basically believes in leading. Yeah. Do you see similarities there?
Yeah, that's a good comparison. I see similarities. And I think Söder is not governing on eternal principles that he tries to put to work, but he's governing on almost borderless pragmatism. And I would say that this has helped him a lot, but also people are asking, what does he really stand for? And I think that Schröder, as a chancellor, finally found his big project, reforming German social system and also economic reforms. And the question would be what Söder's big project could be if elected chancellor. To this point, it's all about Bavaria. You know, what helps Bavaria is good for a CSU politician. So we don't know what his plans for Germany would be because, well, the main quality of a Bavarian politician, a CSU politician, is to think mainly about Bavaria and put Bavaria first. So it's very hard to make a forecast, but Schröder is a good comparison to two men who are really convinced of themselves, I would say so.
Well, I guess that brings us to the big question. What do you think the chances are that he will win the nomination? And I won't hold you to this. Obviously, there's a lot of guesswork here. So what's your thinking?
Yeah, it's really it's a foggy situation. Hard to make a prediction, but I wouldn't rule it out that Söder could become the nominee of the CSU and CDU, but I don't think it's very likely. Why? Because the nomination for the union of CDU and CSU is always, lies always first with a bigger sister party, and that's the CDU. And the way for a CSU candidate to become candidate for chancellor, the only way is that the bigger sister is really serving the nomination on a silver plate. And even more so, because Söder is not picking fights when he doesn't know the outcome. He's really a risk-averse person and politician. So I don't think he would go into a big battle to secure the nomination for him. So what has to happen that Söder gets a nomination? I think the guys running for the nomination in the CDU, the premier of North Rhine-Westphalia, Armin Laschet, Friedrich Merz, an economic expert, and Norbert Röttgen, an expert for international relations in federal parliament, they really would have to, completely implode. The CDU would have to see the need for a compromise candidate from outside the CDU. And that would be the moment where Söder steps in. It's not the likeliest scenario, but it can happen. And if you look at the state of the CDU right now, if you look at the polls that put Söder high above the aforementioned three CDU politicians, I wouldn't rule it out.
I guess the argument against it would be that the CDU, or the union generally, has benefited from increased trust following the coronavirus crisis. But counting for him would be that the Christian Democrats have been in coalition now for various grand coalitions for a long time, and he would give them potentially the opportunity to go into coalition with different partners. Do you think in that respect, and from his experience in Bavaria, that he would be happy to go into a coalition with the Greens?
I think he's preparing that. He needs to be chancellor in such a coalition, but as a party chief of the CSU, he's preparing that. I think he laid the groundwork. If you look at the base of the CSU and the members of the CSU, I think over the decades they were almost taught to look at the Greens with a skepticism and disregard. And in the last couple of years, I think there was a real shift in tone towards the Greens. Of course, it was harsh again during election campaigns, But in general, Söder made it clear that the Greens are, let's say, coalition material for the union. And well, if we look at the last federal election in 2017, we almost entered into a coalition of the union with the Greens and the Free Democrats. So it was almost there in 2017, and in 2021, it will almost surely happen if the numbers hold up.
Mm. And has he? I know we talked about what he genuinely thinks as opposed to what he performatively thinks. But do you think he has changed his tone and maybe even some of his beliefs regarding the taking in of asylum seekers from 2015 onwards? Do you think part of him thinks that Merkel was right and he was wrong?
I'm not sure about that. I think that it was a strategic decision of Söder to reverse course in the refugee question. He was on the brink of losing the Bavarian state election in 2018 because he was instrumental in putting the whole republic into crisis when the CSU and the CDU clashed over the refugee policies in the summer of 2018, when he realized that people were not favoring that way of doing politics and confronting Chancellor Merkel. He took the consequences, and that was the point. He changed his refugee policies. He changed his tone against the AfD, the right-wing party in Germany. So I would say that was another pragmatist decision he took. It's fairly astonishing that 2 years ago, Söder was a tough-talking right-winger who was willing to embrace populist positions and rhetoric, and now he's a lover of trees and bees, and also very soft when it comes to refugee policies. So I would say I think he knows that he can't reverse course another time. He has to stick to his new image, because otherwise people wouldn't buy into that. So I would expect him to stay relatively soft on immigration. But of course, if another situation like the fall of 2015 arises, of course this position would be tested. What would he do if another million of refugees would stand on Germany's doors and another decision like that in the fall of 2015 would be needed? That would be the ultimate test of the new Söder.
Yes, I guess in that circumstance, Germany really would have to put pressure on European partners to share the burden, right? In a way that she didn't in the end. She just accepted personal national responsibility.
The problem in the fall of 2015 was not that Merkel made a decision to let all those refugees in, which was humanitarian and in many ways admirable. The problem was that she wasn't explaining that step well enough. And I think that Söder is a better explainer than Merkel is. I think that also helped him in the corona crisis. I don't know if he would be able to show empathy for refugees. He was lacking that in the past. But in general, he has a good way of communicating with people, and that might also help him in the refugee debate if it rises again.
Well, the other big issue big political issue in Germany at the moment is the attitude towards Russia and the Putin government following the poisoning of Navalny. Are we able to discern where he stands on Germany's strategic position towards towards Russia?
Well, I would say that Söder hasn't made enough foreign policy-wise that we can really judge him on past deeds. But I would think that he stands for continuity if he takes over from Merkel. I wouldn't expect any major changes in German foreign diplomacy. He actually visited Vladimir Putin something like 2 years ago, but he was also slated to go to the US and probably meet Vice President Mike Pence shortly before the coronavirus struck. So that travel was postponed. But so he's keeping all doors open, but I would definitely say he's more interested in transatlantic relations than in very close ties to Russia. I think as a Bavarian first minister, he's attending to all partners mainly for economic reasons, and as a chancellor, the whole framework would be different. But I really would expect him to continue Merkel's course. The one remarkable thing about him, foreign policy wise, is that he had a kind of European education because he was the Bavarian minister for Europe for 1.5 years, and in that role he was partly based in Brussels, so he has a understanding of how the European Union works and is run that clearly exceeds the knowledge of some others.
Well, one last question. Do you have another? I mean, you've got two books out this year. Do you have another one being planned for next year?
Well, I think the two books might be even too much for the market at the moment. No, the one that was planned for this year really was a book about the party, the CSU, which is celebrating its 75th birthday this year. And then came Markus Söder's national breakthrough, and that prompted me and my co-author to finish it and bring it out. I think I'll take a little break from CSU and Mr. Söder, because I actually, in the last 5 years, there were a couple of weeks where I spent more time with Mr. Söder than with my wife. So I think I'll take a little break. But if he's really becoming chancellor, of course, I'll take the challenge.
You could translate the book into English if he gets it next year. And of course, if I were your editor, I'd be sending you to Berlin to cover him. But
that's a thing I would have to think about if Söder becomes chancellor. On the other hand, life in Bavaria and life in Munich is really beautiful, with or without help from the CSU.
Yes.
It's just a beautiful place. But Berlin is tempting too, but I really like it here.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Just to remind listeners, I've been discussing Markus Söder, the Shadow Chancellor, today with Roman Deininger. It's a book he co-wrote with Uwe Ritzer and will be published in October by Drömer Knauer. Roman, thank you very much for joining the podcast.
Thank you, Tim.